Ryan, sometimes when your defense isn't great, you might want to make sure you have insurance to cover yourself when it doesn't cover for you. So, Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency has been a longtime supporter of Gopher Gridiron Radio. And frankly, this is the time of year to be thinking about maybe making a switch with your insurance.
True story. I actually, after my K-Fan spot, yesterday before the game, I ran into somebody who was a Gopher fan who stopped me. And he had switched his insurance here this month to the Burns Insurance Agency. His home and auto saved $600 by switching to the independent insurance agency located in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, your auto, your commercials, insurance, your whatever it may be, and you want to have a Gopher fan give you an independent quote today that can reach 20 different companies to give you the best coverage at the best price, insurancebyburns.com, or email him today, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to the end of a very, very disappointing month of November as your Golden Gopher football squad finishes off the month winless as they go 0-4, which includes a 28-14 loss to Wisconsin yesterday. The Axe heads back to Madison. And there's a lot to get into in a game like this, but for the final time in the regular season, now we'll see about the bowl game, which, yes, if you are listening to this and you haven't looked up, Minnesota will be going to a bowl game as the number one team in APR. They snuck in because of a 52-yard walk-off field goal by the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors last night. Can't believe you didn't know that, college football sicko. But joining us for the last time, great friend, my second cousin, Dinky Town Athlete's Own, Derek Burns. Derek, I wish it was a more positive episode. We've had too many of these of late, but how are things for you this morning?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you guys having me back as always. I'm always ready to talk college football, win or lose.
All right. So I guess we got to get into this game again. This is the fourth straight loss in the row for the Gophers. They, you know, had a 5-3 record, needing just one game to become bowl eligible. From a record standpoint, it ended up going 5-7. They lost four straight. They lost this game 28-24. They had a 14-7 lead, a 14-14 halftime score, and were outscored by 14 in the third period, and ultimately were unable to score at all in the second half. So, you know, the woes of the offense from the first half to the second half continued, Ryan, and it's probably a good place to start. On the day, Ethan Kaliakmanis, 16-28, one touchdown, one interception. Rushing wise, they weren't great. Jordan Newbin, 24 carries for 93 yards, almost a 4-yard average. But as a team, they only averaged 3.8 yards. You include sacks, so not a great day running the ball. But you know, they got off to a really explosive start. And a really efficient first drive that resulted in a touchdown, Ryan.
Yeah, this is the third game this month that we spent the first eight games of the year saying, why is the offense so bad on the first drive? And then the first time Nathan Bowe's hand touches the ball in November, three of the four times, they go down and score a touchdown, and they make it look really easy, like they did against Purdue, like they did against Illinois. And then they do it again here against Wisconsin, a lot of 11 personnel. You know, first play of the game, they have Brevin Spanford clear out the play side linebacker. They run a swing pass behind him. Jordan Newbin gets an easy 20 yards. Then you get a crossing route where both tight ends take out the play side safety, play side linebacker. They come across. Daniel Jackson is right there, gets Minnesota first and goal. Jordan Newbin punches it in. It's just the thing that was a theme in this game for the offense that was also a theme all season is just execution. Mm-hmm. Where play calls are there, and whether it's the quarterback throwing it 10 feet over the receiver's head, whether it's one of the best receivers in the Big Ten dropping a tunnel screen on a cover zero blitz, cover zero meaning no safety there. You're in man coverage. If he just catches that, it's probably going to the house. And this game might have been a lot different potentially in that fourth quarter. Two more turnovers in the fourth quarter, just execution all game long. Derek, I know it's something we talked about. Minnesota goes 11 personnel on that first drive and then largely got away from it. I would be curious to get your thoughts just in general about what you saw in terms of how Minnesota wanted to attack this Wisconsin defense and what did Wisconsin's defense do schematically to adjust to Minnesota as the game went on?
Yeah, so you're right. Minnesota came out really first drive and they had all their man busting routes ready. I mean, Wisconsin is they're a man under two defense. They have been for a long time. And Minnesota had that offensive coaching staff had that schemed up and they ran the ball and passed the ball well against that. The difference was about a drive and a half into the game, Wisconsin started blitzing, run blitzing, pass blitzing. And they had success with that. And really their blitz rate for the rest of the game was, I would have to guess, 75% plus. I mean, they blitz on almost every single play. So that's what changed. And Minnesota's inability to adjust to those blitzes. And I think to your point, Ryan, it wasn't that the coaching staff didn't adjust with their play calls. Minnesota just wasn't able to execute on it. So, I mean, really, if you're going to attack a blitz, there's basically three things you can do. You can run into a blitz, which that has it basically a all or nothing approach. So you're going to get some plays where they're blown up. Other plays, if you run into a blitz, if you're able to break a tackle or two, it's easily an explosive gain or a touchdown. The problem is Minnesota hasn't been able to break tackles running the ball. So that was their fault running. Passing the ball against a blitz, you're usually either left, if it's a man blitz, you have to throw into single coverage, which they did a few times and picked up some pass interferences. Or if it's a zone blitz, you have to throw hot and find those pockets with quick passes. And that's just not Minnesota elected to go against the blitz with a lot of max protect. They weren't clean with their protection, even with max protect. And they weren't able to find guys in single coverage downfield and execute on it. Now, in the second half, they had a number, as PJ Fleck talked about in his post-game presser, and if you missed that, I'd suggest going back and reading or listening to that. They had their blitz-busting plays all dialed up for the second half. I don't think they executed on one of them. So that was, to me, the story of the game for this offense, was just the inability to execute against Wisconsin's blitzes.
I mean, I also think that, I mean, we need to have an Ethan Kelly-McManus discussion, and I don't want this to come off because this is truly not how I feel. I'm not out on Ethan Kelly-McManus fully like I know many are, but I'm just at a point now where after I watched his 18th career start, there are throws that he makes or decisions that he makes that just can't happen. And I'm as open as I've ever been to Minnesota exploring a transfer quarterback, of which, by the way, this is me telling you, I do expect the University of Minnesota and this coaching staff to seriously explore a transfer quarterback to come in and compete with Ethan Kelly-McManus. I would also tell you, if you want to figure out more about that, it's $1 on Gopher Illustrated for the next month, or it's 75% off if you've been waiting. And there's going to be a lot of things in the portal that are going to ebb and flow, and we'll cover that here in the next month. But Luke, I'll give it to you. The point I'm trying to make here of, I mean, he's 16 of 28 on the day. You see some good throws he makes, like the Daniel Jackson on the touchdown. And then you see some decisions like that final interception he threw. That ball's got to be into the stands, and yeah, it's not. Or it's a third down in the second half, which has been their Achilles heel offensively, and they don't execute. Where Ethan has a clean pocket, his mechanics are good, and he steps into the throw, and it's 12 feet over Elijah Spencer's head. And the funny part about that one to me specifically is, after rewatching it this morning, Minnesota checked into a pass. Yes, you're hearing that correctly, Gopher football fans. There was a check with me to the sidelines. They adjusted the play, and that's the one they went with. It's wide open, and he just airmails it. So, I mean, what did you think of Ethan's day? And does my point of just bringing in more 2024 competition outside of their high school commit, Drake Lindsey, make sense to you?
Well, I think it does. I think part of the reason they're in the situation is that they didn't actually bring someone in to commit to compete with him, right? So that they could land him. And ultimately, you know, it hasn't panned out maybe nearly as well as they want. If you look at his career statistics, you know, he's consistently right around 53 to 54%. He was 54% last year, 53% this year. You know, he was much better in the touchdown to interception ratio because last year it's inverted 3-4. This year it's 14-9. But ultimately, you know, there were just some inconsistencies. And you saw that consistently throughout the season where he was often very good in the first and second quarter and it drops off. Now, that's a broader conversation we can probably have in the offseason. Another broader conversation we can have is whether or not they're utilizing him and putting him in positions to succeed, given his skill set and how they game theory, or how they approach game theory. Now, ultimately, with him, you saw games that stick out to me, like the North Carolina game. There were throws there, he just didn't make them, right? You know, you think about this game, that Elijah Spencer throw is there and he just sails it, and it's just not there. But there's also something we have to acknowledge too, is that this team dropped a lot of passes. You think of the Daniel Jackson drop on the tunnel screen where very clearly he was going to score, or he's going to definitely get the first down, if not score. You know, those are just things that, you know, they ultimately land on the statistics of the quarterback, but Ethan executed that play quite well. And that's frustrating. You can look at maybe even a Chris Ottman Bell on the last one. He had maybe two drops in the last couple games that could have been touchdowns. Now, one maybe would have been a fantastic one against Wisconsin, but, you know, that's one too where he put it where only his receiver can make the play. I'm not necessarily trying to defend him, but I'm trying to be objective in that, you know, he could be better. I think he definitely could be better, Derek, when he's making zone reads. I don't know if he has the read there, but there were a couple opportunities yesterday that I thought he could have kept the ball, which would have been a positive play versus a loss.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add is that I try and look at, and I think the coaching staff does too, the areas of the game with each player that they need to work on if they've mastered or done well in certain areas, but there's one thing left. I think the challenge with Ethan has been it's sometimes it's one area, sometimes it's another area. It's the inconsistency that I think has flummoxed the coaches. Sometimes he has difficulty making his pre- and post-snap reads. Other times he's great with his reads, like the North Carolina game, but he's missing his spots. Yep. He's not hitting his spot. So the fact that it's not always one thing, I think, presents an additional challenge. And I think Ryan's right in that college football is a business. You have to look at each position and determine whether or not you're where you need to be at that position. And if you're not, you need to recruit and look to improve. However, college football, and I've said this many times, you can't give up on a kid. You just never know. Some players it takes a half a season to get to where they need to be. Other players it takes 3.5 years. You just don't know, and for different reasons at different positions. So, you just don't know when things are going to either slow down or click, or one of these areas gets better. But at the same time, you can't plan for that. I think at this point, and I agree with Ryan that you have enough. You have enough evidence, you have enough data collected that you can't wait around for that growth. This is a business, and every year is critical for the coaching staff and their livelihood. So you probably got to look to add to that and develop more competition and get everybody better.
And one thing I want to add, where like it's not just transfer quarterbacks. Pick a position on this team. I'm probably going to just agree with you if you said, yeah, they got to bring in a transfer running back, receiver, defensive tackle, corner. I mean, the answer is probably going to be yes for me. I'm not going to fight people on that. But it's to Derek's point, and one that Fleck has made at plenty of press conferences in my 7 years now covering him. And he tells players, and they know this, his job is to out-recruit you. And that includes every position on the football team. So it'll be a very interesting next month to see how they kind of do that. You know, I just feel for Daniel Jackson, where he has another great game and he just has a couple cataclysmic moments in that second half where could have been a touchdown if he catches the tunnel screen, doesn't see a linebacker coming up from behind him, gets him punched out. I mean, I think he only had 3 drops on the entire season, and two of them were in the last 2 weeks. But I also, you know, one of the areas, Derek, where I think this game is won and lost, especially in a rivalry like this, is in the trenches. And I didn't think it was a great day for Minnesota up front. What did you think about the Minnesota moving company?
Well, I think I would echo what I said earlier in that when Wisconsin was in read and diagnose, just head up, I think Minnesota looked pretty good, particularly in that man under two look. But what hurt them is when Wisconsin went to the like the cross dog run blitzes. That was their kind of go-to run blitz on first and second down. And what that does is it takes away thinking from the front seven. You don't have to think. You don't have to react. You don't have to diagnose. You're just, you know that where you're going pre-snap because it's a blitz and a stunt, and that ups the aggressiveness of that front seven. When that happened for Wisconsin, they were more physical than Minnesota's offensive line. Wisconsin's defensive line physically beat Minnesota's offensive line when they went into that 75% plus blitz rate. And I think that was the difference, Ryan, because as I mentioned, if you're going to run into a blitz, which isn't a terrible idea because it's you have a chance of breaking an explosive play, but you have to be able to win those and you have to be able to break tackles. And Wisconsin was there's no question Wisconsin won up front on both sides of the ball.
I just want to add, make sure that we address the second touchdown drive. And you know, this is when Wisconsin was blitzing more. One of the main reasons that they were able to make progress and accumulate yards and ultimately result in a touchdown was that they correctly got two pass interferences against them. And part of my thought process was like, man, they're really struggling when they're kind of exposed to cover, right? And that's something statistically that doesn't show up for like an Ethan Kalyapmanis, right? Where he ultimately, he makes the right read, throws it, and the guy blatantly interferes. But that obviously resulted in success for the Gophers. On that drive, you got to give the Gophers credit. They capitalized on a couple of different, or at least one third down. And you know, they were consistent, and then they schemed open Daniel Jackson. And that was absolutely beautiful, Ryan.
It was, you know, Minnesota has Corey Crooms in the slot on that play. They have him go over the center of the field to kind of clear out behind him. And Daniel Jackson fakes like he's going to go to the back pylon, drives that left foot into the ground, creates immediate separation, and Nathan's throw is true. I mean, it doesn't have to be incredibly difficult. But when you get your slot receiver clearing out the middle, you run a slant in back behind him. Makes a lot of sense. And Nathan makes the throw. I mean, to your point, though, just on third down, Minnesota has 13 third downs on the day. Their average distance to go, 6.5 yards. I mean, that's the story of the offense also this season is when it went bad, how did it go bad? Because Minnesota wasn't efficient on early downs. Why weren't they efficient on early downs? They weren't good enough up front at times. Their running backs weren't breaking enough tackles. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can point to me. But just wasn't good enough, wasn't consistent enough, and they didn't execute enough to win this game.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing that just generally frustrates me and has frustrated me basically since the 2019 season, and this might be I don't know if this is a scheme thing, Derek, or this is a or this is just, you know, a talent thing. The target share is just it's too focused on one or occasionally two receivers, but in this game, you know, Daniel Jackson ends up with 9 of the receptions. You know, they only have receptions to 3 other players on the day. So take me through or try to rationalize to me why this continues to be a consistent kind of issue or trend, or am I making too much of this?
Well, I believe that this year it's a result of them scheming up plays for Daniel Jackson. I think that if you go back to early in the Kirk Shiraka era, it was whoever, you know, the scheme was getting guys open. It was not scheming up plays for a particular individual. When you're heavy RPO, you're going to run RPO out of different formation, different personnel. Sometimes it's the slot. Sometimes it's a split receiver. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. And that, I think you saw a little bit more of a mix when they were relying on that. This year in particular, let's just talk about the Wisconsin game. Many times they'd line Daniel Jackson up to the two receiver side. They would motion the slot out of his to leave him in single coverage. And then they would scheme a play for him to get open. Because when you bring the slot away from him with the tight end on the other side, the safety is going to have to put more attention on the other side of the field. So there was, it was pretty obvious that they were doing those things in order to get Daniel Jackson in single coverage. So I think the reason that you saw a heavy, you know, target share for Daniel was in this game. And I think this season in particular was because they were scheming up plays for him. So then the question has to be, well, you know, if the teams are going to notice that and are going to sit on his routes or take him away, you have to have an answer for that. And I think the one other comment I'll just make about the passing game in general, you didn't see, other than maybe the Nebraska game, you didn't see Minnesota go to a quick passing game, which was interesting to me, especially as the running back injuries piled up. One way to combat that or to play off of that is to basically take plays that would be running plays and just convert them into short passes, whether that's just, you know, tight end passes, you know, stop routes, bubble screens, things like that. They just never went to that. Now against a team like Wisconsin, if they're in press coverage, they're taking away a lot of that. But I think this, you know, this point plays into other games as well. And so I think the question has to be asked, like, did they just not feel confident? Was that too much of a risky strategy where we were happy running inside zone, or did they not have confidence that they could execute on those plays or make the right reads? Because I really thought this offense looked the best when they were in light personnel and spreading the field out, which is kind of the opposite of what they want their identity to be honest. But yep, that's where I saw when they were playing in space, I thought that's where they looked the best. When they're running mid zone, you know, spreading things out, 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, getting guys open underneath. And it just didn't seem to want to rely on that.
Yeah, I would also add that I think that that's where probably Ethan is at his best, right? Especially if they simplify the reads in the short kind of quick passing game. You know, ultimately, I think that's where he has his most success. Ryan, we maybe just need to touch on the running game here a little bit. I mean, I know we talked about a little bit about offensive line, and I'm not trying to make an excuse, but the reality here is that this is a running back room that's pretty much been decimated. And then you look at, like, Sean Tyler had troubles holding on to the ball. So, you know, they lost faith in him and being able to have him. So then that's how Jordan Newbin ends up with 24 carries on the day. But they weren't able to execute. And ultimately, because they weren't able to break some tackles, you know, they weren't able to have more explosive plays in the running game, because I think that they were there.
I think the story of Minnesota's running game this year is going to be that it underperformed, but I think a lot of that has to do with just the way it played out injury-wise.
Yes.
Where there were plays in this game and in previous games where if the running back just makes one man miss, like Mohamed Ibrahim was so reliable in doing, you would have had chunk plays. But because of the way that the injury situation went out, the way that Sean Tyler proved through the first 11 games he couldn't hang on to the football, that just is what it is. I mean, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this other than, like, Jordan Newbin is a great story and he works incredibly hard. And I don't mean to have this come across as mean, but 24 carries and you force 2 missed tackles. In the month of November, Jordan Newbin got 87 carries and he forced 8 missed tackles. That is 1 missed tackle force for, I think it's like almost every 11 carries. I mean, that, in what world can that work in this offense? And that's where, with Bryce Williams graduating, with Sean Tyler graduating, we'll see. I know everybody's already ready to tell me that Darius Taylor is going to go get $900 million somewhere else and that this program is doomed. But even if Darius Taylor does come back, which I still don't understand why we're operating under the assumption that he doesn't, but that's just me. Like, if your core is Darius Taylor and Zach Evans and Jordan Newbin, you've got 2 freshman running backs who didn't stay healthy this season. And then you've got a guy who maybe the 40 carry game off the rip just decimated him for the rest of the year. I don't know. But you need to bring in a transfer back or two to go with the two true freshmen you have been coming into the game. And that's where I think next year, especially when, in theory, you have four of your five offensive linemen returning, they should be better up front. But you also need to get more consistent play from your backs that can break tackles in Big Ten scenarios, I'll say.
Yeah. And ultimately, too, you bring up a really good point. Like, they're going to have to find some depth at running back because both Taylor and Evans just were not able to stay healthy enough. Another point you made, like you have to in the running game, especially in this kind of running game, be able to break tackles. And it's best, you know, it's that long rush by Darius Taylor where he, you know, he broke, it was maybe a fourth down against Northwestern, and he ripped it off for like a 40 or 50 yard touchdown, right?
Runs through the chest of a veteran Northwestern linebacker at the line of scrimmage and then just accelerates for a big, I mean, that's what this offense missed this year is consistent play from their tailbacks. And because of injuries, they just weren't ever able to get it.
Yep, exactly. I did like, though, the wrinkle that they were able to get Jordan Newbin involved, especially early in the passing game. You know, they obviously schemed that up really well and saw something on tape, you know, with the man coverage. I'd still like to see them try and get their running backs more involved. We definitely saw Darius Taylor can be an asset in the receiving game. So, you know, ultimately, if he can stay healthy and get carries and accumulate carries for him, that's something he can do well. I can't recall if Zach Evans was good in the past game as well. Do you know, Ryan, off the top of your head?
Both players can help you. And I just think they've, especially without now Span Ford and Chris Ottman-Bell graduate, Corey Crooms graduates, like you're going to have to figure out what your next set of playmakers are going to be to complement Daniel Jackson, because now everyone's going to have an entire offseason to scheme against Daniel Jackson and know that he is going to be the guy. Well, you need to have someone like Elijah Spencer step up, Lemeke Brockington, who returns out of nowhere yesterday to play a couple of snaps, which hope to see more of him in the bowl game. Some of these younger receivers like Kenrick Lanier, TJ McWilliams, so whatever they do in the transfer portal, younger tight ends like Jamison Gears and Pierce Walsh say, I mean, you're going to have to figure out a way to now design an offense in 2024 that is Daniel Jackson and then what? So, it's going to be a very crucial next 9-10 months for them.
I think, though, like if we're really honest with ourselves, I think that Eric, you can comment on this. You know, you don't follow the recruiting particularly closely. I think from a skill set standpoint, if they can stay healthy, I think the specialists they have are much better than the situation they were in than they were, you know, the end of last season.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to actually comment on the special teams for this game. What was up with Wisconsin special teams? Their kicking game, punting game, kickoff was awful. Yes. I mean, this was maybe a game where to end the season where you can legitimately say that Minnesota won on the special teams.
I would say that Wisconsin was one of the teams that just decides to trust their kickoff coverage, which I would tell you I didn't believe it until I looked at it. Because I didn't know what to do with my hands, truthfully, when Minnesota was getting positive yards on kick returns. But they ended the day -3 in field position on 5 kick returns because of that final penalty. Quinton Redding returns a punt. I didn't know that was legal here for 22 yards, which is great. I thought their punter was fine. I don't know.
Their punter had some
lull. Just a strategy by them to kick it to Minnesota in the return game, which obviously –
It wasn't a bad strategy. Yeah,
it's just now they end the season, and I did the math last night. In 12 regular season games, Minnesota's kickoff return unit, when they had their primary guy get in, and it wasn't like an up back or a weird scenario, they lost 71 yards of field position compared to fair catching everything. I mean, it's just it is what it is. So
yeah, I mean they were better. It was a bold strategy, but I think
like Mark Crawford deserves a lot of credit for.
Yeah, he's a lot better.
Yeah, he's gotten better.
He's gotten better, and Dragan Kesich is one of the best in the Big Ten. We didn't get to see that yesterday, but
We probably need to say too. I think this is the end of the Brady Weeks era, and he was quite good.
He was good again. Yeah. Yes, folks, I am capable of complimenting people on special teams. Like, I'm going to miss Brady Weeks. He was great in his time here, and he's never going to get talked about. And that's the life of a long snapper. And I hope he and his family know that. But you know, Mark Crawford improved. Dragan Kessler's is good. It's just another part of the Northwestern and Illinois games. Why did Minnesota lose other than cataclysmic defensive plays? Well, your gunner has the most confident catch in the end zone that you'll ever see. And then Sean Tyler, your kickoff return unit, it was dreadful all year. They fumble it and give Illinois the ball in the red zone 5 seconds into the game. It's just another season, another game of just not enough net positive for them.
Here's a random question before we try and catch a break. So like a Brady Weeks, really good. What does the NFL look for in a long snapper?
I would guess athleticism to be able to cover somebody potentially on a punt. I don't pretend to be a recruiting guru of long snappers.
I don't either. I don't know. This is actually a funny story. My sister's, one of her friends was the long snapper for the Seahawks for like 3 or 4 seasons, won a Super Bowl for him. So I'm going to have to text her and ask her friend to ask her husband what they look for, because maybe I can get an answer there. But yeah, it's something. He was really good. I just don't know if he's athletic enough to maybe be to be an NFL long snapper. I just have no reference point. All right, let's catch a break, and then we'll talk some defense. Ryan, this entire episode, I've worn my Comply foam earbud tips, and let me tell you, I don't think I've adjusted them once. I don't actually really even notice that they're in my ears. They are very comfortable. I can't even really hear my kids who are playing above me in my in-laws' house. These are just a great product.
100%. And if you're looking for something for your, whether it's your son, your daughter, your significant other, and you're thinking to yourself, well, they're always wearing those earbuds, we'll get them some Comply foam memory foam tips. The silicone tips cause pain. You're constantly adjusting. And to Luke's point, they fit in your ear. They block out the noise. So what I want you to do is go to complyfoam.com. When you get to checkout, promo code GG23 to save 20% off that order. That is complyfoam.com. Promo code GG23 to save 20% off your order.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home, reach out to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. You can find them at teamdinkytown.com, or you can call them at 612-250-8562. And guess what, Ryan? You can have a portion of the sale price go to Dinkytown Athletes to support your favorite Golden Gopher sports teams.
100%. And so if you're looking for a realtor because you're like, oh, well, I'm thinking about buying or selling a house, I don't know anybody, go to a Gopher fan who's really good at what they do. TeamDinkytown.com. 1% of that purchase price goes to helping Minnesota's NIL efforts. So TeamDinkytown.com, or you can give them a call today at 612-250-8562.
All right, let's talk a little bit while the Gophers were on defense. Ultimately, the Gophers gave up probably too many explosive plays at kind of bad times, and they ultimately gave up 28 points on the day. If you look at this, they actually gave up, let's see, 3 explosive plays all in the running game. If you look at game on paper, Braylon Allen was better than he's ever been against the Gophers. I'm not entirely sure why. What did you say?
They give up 6 plays of 20 or more yards, including 3 through the air of 24 or more.
Yeah, I go by game on paper, and they use EPA, and so they gave them only 3 explosive plays, and they're all in the running game. So yeah, I know what you're saying. Ultimately, and just for definition on that explosive play, that would be when you're passing, your EPA is greater than 2.4, and when you're rushing, it's greater than 1.8. But ultimately, I think maybe the place to start here is, you know, Wisconsin ran the ball really well. And part of them running the ball particularly well and having a 6.1 yard average on 44 carries was the fact that Tanner Mordecai was really good. So, Derek, what was Wisconsin trying to do to combat this Gopher defense?
I think that the Minnesota defense looked pretty good early, and I think what changed it was the quarterback's ability to use his legs. I think that changed the dynamic of everything. Not only the quarterback scrambling for yards, which he picked up a couple really key first downs to extend drives, but also just his ability tendency to run to throw. And I think that, and I talked about this with Ryan last night, I think that opposing coaches had scouted up this Gopher defense and realized that if the Gopher defense wasn't going to blitz, which they weren't in this game because of the injuries in the secondary, they figured out that if Minnesota rushed three or four, they were coaching opposing quarterbacks to extend the plays. Because a number of times, you know, the first looks are covered, but you might have one of those three or four rushers leak through, but one's not enough because the quarterback can evade one rusher. He can sidestep, he can roll out, he can step up in the pocket, and that gives him another 2 to 3 seconds for somebody to get open. And that just killed Minnesota. I think, again, at first glance on those pass coverages is pretty good. And on many plays, the first few seconds were pretty good. But then when the quarterback's able to either tuck the ball and run for 15 or is able to extend the play and hit, you know, on a key third down, convert, you know, with a pass, that just, I think, was the difference. And I think that also changes how you play the run as well. So to me, that was the big change in the game, was when Wisconsin determined that they were just going to try to extend plays more. And then I think the run game, just to touch on that really quickly, more of the same, where Minnesota, you know what, 5 out of 6 run defenses look good. But the problem is the 1 out of 6, it's almost always somebody who's not in the right gap because they're either not making the right read or the right fit, or they're not recognizing the right play. It's power and they think it's zone, and that's all it takes. And especially against a back like Braylon Allen, he's able to get 8 yards because you have a bad run fit, and then he's able to break one tackle and now it's 20 yards.
It was 50 yards, but yeah, you know.
Nobody wants to also hear it, but when you're down at one point in that game, your top three corners, and yeah, I'm watching Zaquan Bryan and Tyler Bride out there, like, there's so many things in this game to me that go hand in hand, where you lose Trayvon Jones early. His backup, Tariq Watson, comes into the game. He gets rolled up on, doesn't return outside of special teams. Okay, so you're down to your cornerback four and Tyler Bride, who hasn't really played any meaningful snaps on the outside this season. Well, Justin Wally gets banged up. Okay, so you're throwing in Zaquan Bryan, a true freshman who was just a running back about a month ago. You know, okay, he's originally a corner, moved to running back when everything went to hell there, and then he moved back to corner, but he gets put into a spot. You're already without your top two safeties at strong in Aiden Goosby and Darius Green for this game, and then Coleman Bryson gets rolled up on. He misses a couple series, so then you have to see Harry Brown, a true freshman, out there. So what is the point I'm trying to make in this that nobody wants to hear? Well, I'm guilty of complaining about the lack of pressure, but that's why the beauty of Derek Burns, among people that are always smarter than you, that you should always, in whatever situation in life, surround yourself with, is I have lamented this defensive line for the better part of this month. They haven't gotten home enough, even when they've been rushing four. But why didn't Minnesota blitz more yesterday to try and get more pressure on Mordecai? Because they probably didn't trust anyone in coverage, considering you're rolling out Tyler Bride, Zaquan Bryan, Kerry Brown, or even Coleman Bryson back there. Like, that's the reality of it, is you're not going to throw 5 and 6 at Mordecai to try and get him off his spot if you don't trust your guys in man coverage that they don't get beaten and it's an explosive play. I mean, we talked about in the pre-production, or in the preview episode, Luke, Mordecai's legs. That's the thing I wanted to have them cut off the snake. And unfortunately, 69 yards with his legs, extended a multitude of different plays because Minnesota rushed 3, rushed 4, weren't able to get home at any point. And that's an issue, and we can talk about that at a different time. But I think within the scope of this game, the point I'm trying to make is, why didn't they blitz more? because when you have the personnel you have in the secondary at points in this game, I would imagine Joe Rossi doesn't trust them enough in man coverage to be able to get aggressive up front. And so you have to pick your poison. Do you drop eight and drop seven and hope that Mordecai can't find the soft spot in the zone and that your defensive line can be disruptive? Or do you send five or six and chance an explosive play? I don't know that there was a right answer for them to take, Derek.
Yeah, and that's, and they ultimately they chose to play coverage most of the time. And you could even see as the game went on, if you watched Mordecai, as soon as he recognized they were dropping eight or nine, he was looking to move with his legs, not necessarily scramble, run the ball, but he was looking to move to extend the play. And you know, some of those passes, particularly in the second half, some of those passes they completed were 5 or 6 seconds after the snap. It's
you
just
can't expect
I don't care.
Anybody to cover that.
No,
long
I don't care who football. You have in the secondary. They're not going to be able to cover for 6 seconds. I mean, if the wide receivers know what they're doing and they come back to the ball and run scramble drill, you can't cover that. That was how Wisconsin was able to extend plays and ultimately find enough guys and make enough plays in the pass game.
Yeah, and you got to give Wisconsin some credit here. They identified an issue when Luke Fickell came in, and part of it was maybe scheme and fit and just like the frustration of the fan base. But they brought in a number of different quarterbacks, Mordecai being one of them and Graham Mertz being out. And, you know, he was, at least for their offense, probably the biggest difference maker. You know, statistically, it's not gaudy. He was 14 to 22 for 145 yards. And then, you know, he was 9 carries for 69 yards. But the stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet is really what made the difference for him yesterday. Yes, he had one interception, but you could argue that that was kind of a meaningless interception. Now, if Tyler Newbin was able to notice that he was there and Mordecai didn't make the tackle, maybe it's a different story. But ultimately, it was meaningless because it was a Hail Mary that didn't turn into a Hail Mary like what happened to the Miami Dolphins the New York Jets the other night. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, Mordecai felt like to me he was the difference. Yes, Braylon Allen was better on the day, but I didn't think he was phenomenal. But you can see where when he's healthy, he can definitely be a difference maker in that just getting an extra 2 and 3 yards there by falling forward and being his size and breaking tackles. That's just something that, you know, the Gophers obviously lacked, and Ryan, he was able to accomplish.
I mean, Braylon Allen's a good tailback. Coming into the game, he'd run for over 3,000 yards in his career. I think he had 33 rushing touchdowns and forces 6 missed tackles forced, has over 100 yards after contact on the day. And that's what happens when you look at that 50-yard run where it's all three levels of the Gopher defense that are at fault. You have a defensive lineman right there, just lets Allen go through his hands. Cody Lindenberg comes from the backside to try and make the tackle. He's right there to do it. Gets run through by the shins. Minnesota's play side safety gets way too far downhill, and Allen just runs past him. And then you get the corner on the outside that doesn't maintain an edge, and he runs around him. I mean, that's how this always continues to happen, where this defense played well for 80% of plays this season. I would, if I had to put a general mark on it. And the thing that is going to be remembered, and rightfully so, is those 15, 20% of plays when it didn't go well were just cataclysmic. I mean, you even look at the Braylon Allen touchdown run, the first one. If Devin Williams just sets an edge, Tyler Newbin gets Braylon Allen funneled right to him, right there. And it's a tackle for loss, and Newbin gets the credit, but Williams would get the credit in the coaching room. Well, he doesn't set an edge, and Allen bounces it outside. Newbin doesn't win the foot race. Allen does. Or you look at, I think it was the second or third touchdown, where it's play action. Minnesota's linebacker doesn't have his eyes in the right spot, doesn't see the tight end coming across the formation until it's too late. Touchdown. I mean, it's just things that need to be better in game 12, especially with players that have now played hundreds of snaps this season. And I know I don't know if you want to touch on it, Derek, but I would hate to steal your thunder in this regard in terms of probably the number one thing with this defense that was different than everything else. Every other defense we've seen under Rossi wasn't exactly a physical thing for them.
No, I think that, you know, and I have died on this hill. I appreciate you setting that up because it would give me a chance to say it one more time. I really don't think it was a speed, strength, athleticism thing on defense. I don't think, although injuries piled up, that really brought more inexperience. I don't think it was a talent issue on defense. What I saw over and over and over again from this defense was the lack of awareness and being just not defending your gap, making that read, being in the right position. I think part of the reason why this year was different is because the strategy they used with the safeties was definitely a more high risk strategy, where I think they got to go back to, you know, going forward, go back to where the Joe Rossi defenses have been successful, which is really kind of boring, which is the defenses, safeties playing back, everybody's in their gap, everybody knows their assignment, you have the right personnel and the right read, and you're in the right gap for each play. That's just, you know, it's boring, but it's sound defense, and you can get hit every now and then, but there's a lot of bend, not break. You don't give up a lot of points. What we saw this year was that too many guys not recognizing, guessing on plays, trying to make big plays, trying to get interceptions, trying to blow up runs, and it came back to bite them. So I think they have to go back to the fundamentals of why they've been successful in the past. And that's probably number one thing on order. And, you know, I would just close it out by saying the lack of awareness too. And I think part of this is an experience, and part of it is just the game isn't shrunk enough for these guys, but the lack of awareness and being able to recognize some of these plays, the zone read early in the game, Jack Henderson has Braylon Oliver tackled for a 6-yard loss.
Or Braylon Allen.
Braylon Oliver's gone. Braylon Allen. And he stays on the quarterback, and Braylon gets a 20-yard gain because he just doesn't make the right read. Another play that's broken for a long gain, it's power. One of the defensive linemen, I'm not going to name him, thinks it's his own. He's ripping down the line of scrimmage because he thinks it's zone. He doesn't recognize that it's power. And, you know, the interception, the non-interception that you alluded to, Luke, that thunks off of, you know, Tyler Newbin's midsection, his eyes aren't in the backfield. If his eyes are in the backfield, he's recognizing that play. It's probably another interception, and he's even higher in the record books, you know, being has a higher lead in the record books for interception. So that's one thing the whole year that has stuck out to me, guys, was just the lack of awareness from the defense to recognize some of these plays, which then puts them in the right position. When you're not aware and you don't make that right read, that's when you're out of position and guys are breaking tackles and you're giving up explosive gains.
Yeah, let me just jump in there because of that lack of situational awareness or, you know, ultimately just inexperience, that resulted in a lot of explosive plays. And if you look, and I use game on paper for this, Ryan, so you can use whatever source you use. But if you look at in the losses that they have, they gave up 39 explosive plays. If you look at the games that they won, they only gave up 12 explosive plays. You know, conversely, they never were great offensively in explosive plays. But in games they lost, they only had 21. So they got out, you know, they got out explosive played by 18, right? And in games they won, they were only up by 2. So your margin of error, and if we all believe that explosive plays are key to winning football games in the current state of college football, you know, ultimately the defense just gave up too many. And you can go back to, and at least for me, you go back to that Northwestern loss, the situational awareness was probably the poorest it was. And they gave up 9 explosive plays in that game, 8 of them in the passing game, and most of those in that second half, right? That is ultimately where this defense regressed the most, is those explosive plays due to that situational awareness.
And I would just say one more time, Luke, when you read off those statistics, if I hadn't watched any of the games and I just had read those statistics, I would put all my money on the fact that Minnesota's defense was too slow or too small, not strong enough, that they just got mowed over. And I'll say again, I really didn't think that was the case. I didn't think it was a talent issue. It was a read fit position issue.
And that's actually, Ryan, where I want to transition a question for you, is like, you know, in our group chat, Derek pointed out that, you know, a lot of these coaches in similar programs seem to have a dip around like year 6, 7, or 8. And I hypothesized here that that might be a function of how recruiting goes and how you rely on, you know, you rely on some guys for a long stretch, like Minnesota has. You know, they've turned over quite a number that played a lot of football for them, and they were pretty inexperienced at first. But I guess where I'm going this with my question, you know, this, they have, I think they have athletes and talent. It seems like they just need to get more experience, and this year was it, but you had to take your lumps, you know, but we also talked about, they have to be able to fill, you know, fill some voids. But the other reality, which I'm trying to work towards, is Ryan, they just made some misses in the transfer portal this year, which they hadn't previously.
Yeah, I mean, they'd been a team that had hit at a really high rate on so many transfers that they had brought in. And this year that number was lower than what it normally is, and it showed. But I don't think that should deter them going forward from
– No.
And I know that's not the point you're trying to make, but it's the point I want to, is just because you missed here doesn't mean you shouldn't go back and try again. Mm-hmm. And I don't anticipate them saying having that kind of mindset from – the conversations I've had with them here this month. But I mean, you're right in that. I mean, linebacker was an issue all year, and the Western Michigan transfer they brought in there was banged up early on, and it just never became the best option in the eyes of the defensive coordinator, who's also the linebackers coach, over a lot of these younger guys who continually were making mistakes. And I mean, that's the hope would be going into 2024 when you get hopefully a healthy Cody Lindenberg back. You get Maverick Baranowski, Dev Williams, another year older. And, you know, hopefully they've learned and they can comprehend, and that processor in their head can go a lot quicker, because one of the things Rossi loves to talk about with linebacker play is you can't just see one thing. You have to see everything. And I think their ability to see everything consistently was an issue for pretty much most of the season. So you'd be hoping that with another 15 bowl practices, with spring practice, with fall practice, that heading into that North Carolina game next year, there'll be more adept to diagnose and make plays more consistently.
Yeah. And the injury to Lindenberg obviously hurt them. You can see that, you know, how good he was in a couple plays, like in the Illinois game, et cetera, but he was really limited outside of what, maybe 2 or 3 games. But I thought, you guys can tell me I'm wrong here, but I really thought that Maverick Baranowski, when healthy, was getting better and better as each week went along. Not perfect, but when he went out, you definitely saw, you know, the play slip at the linebacker position. I liked him. And Ryan, remind me, he's a freshman, right?
Richard freshman.
Richard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that, I mean, you saw how well he played against like Iowa per se, where it's still crazy to think, guys, that this defense plays so well against Iowa in Iowa City, forces 3 turnovers, is getting pressure. And then you have moments like happened too consistently, like Northwestern or like the entire month of November. And it's just like, as much as, and I talked about it with Justin Gard this morning at Gopher Football Sunday, is this team was just never able to play 60 minutes of complimentary football. Or even this defense was never able to play outside of really that Iowa game, I would say. And peace and love to the Big Ten West champs. They have one of the worst offenses in college football. But you just weren't able to play 60 minutes of football consistently enough on defense. And injuries played a part in that, certainly. But it just can't happen like that again next year.
Yeah, I think ultimately when you look at, historically, you know, PJ Fleck teams, their defenses have been really good. And I think Iowa's a good comp, right? Iowa's offense isn't great. And that's what they talk about a lot, but their defense is really good and their special teams are really good and they deserve that credit. And that's ultimately what they can rely on. In this situation, the problems that Minnesota presented were they occasionally would have issues on offense and obviously special teams as well. but like you weren't able to rely on this defense like you had been in years past. And that ultimately, Derek, I think is the root of why we saw the regression here. Not like people want to talk about offense all the time, but I think ultimately it really comes down to the defense is being the crux of the problem.
Yeah, it's a push pull, and this for the game theory and game strategy that this coaching staff uses, you need the defense to be good. You need the defense. They're not going to win shootouts. They don't have the right approach, maybe not the right personnel on offense to be able to do that. That became abundantly clear. So you need to hold teams under 28 points for maybe 24. And you know, as Ryan has pointed out several times, and people get angry at him, but look at the losses, and you look at the points that were given up, and that's the story. They weren't able to limit things.
35 points per game in the month of November, and I swear that the thing people want to talk about most is the offense.
And I think
the offense is its own separate issue and its own separate entity, but it's just that's the story of why Minnesota went 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
Is and it, they collapsed on special teams and defensively against Illinois and in Northwestern, or else you'd be 7-5. Like, and then why didn't you win more games and win the Big Ten West? Well, your defense wasn't good enough.
Yeah. No question. All right. I don't know anything you guys want to get to. Otherwise, we'll catch another break. And
Tyler Newbin is now the all-time leader in interceptions here at the University of Minnesota with that one before halftime. I'm going to miss watching him. I mean, we've watched, and I know a lot of people in that 2020 season were very down on him when he first got his first experience, and I think all three of us were included, but he got continually better, worked as hard as I've seen a lot of players in this program work. Just somebody that always set the tone at practice, and I know that's something that the defensive coaches appreciated about him was that was the thing Rossi highlighted when we asked him on Wednesday was, what are you going to remember about Tyler Newbin? What do you think his legacy is the way that he brought energy every single day, the way that he in theory taught these young safeties behind him how to practice every day. So all-time leader in interceptions, going to be a day two pick more than likely, if not a day one pick, we'll see. And Minnesota gets back-to-back top 70, I don't know, draft picks from their free safety position, and Antoine Winfield, now Tyler Newbin, and you know, I'm going to miss watching Noob run around there.
You know, you bring up a really good point there, Ryan, that we probably should highlight both for the defense and for the offense, and Derek kind of made it subtly as well earlier, is that never write a kid off, right? Because you never know where they're going to go. I mean, I talked for years about Pearl Smith, and like he could have given up and gone elsewhere, but he stuck it out and he got rewarded for it. He's now playing in the NFL. And then Tyler Newbin, I mean, you're right. He struggled as a freshman. We look at the struggles of maybe Nathan Kaliak-Manis or go down the list of players that had issues this year that we talked about, but there's no reason to believe that they can't continue to work and turn a corner, right? And I think that, you know, you got to give Newbin credit as well for obviously living up to the potential and kind of the expectations that were brought for him after he wasn't able to early on. Ryan, Black Friday has come and gone, but guess what? The Black Friday promo code for home field is still alive and well. So if you're a Gopher fan and you're looking for holiday gifts for the Gopher fan in your life, you should go to homefieldapparel.com, find Minnesota, and get some of that really awesome retro swag that home field provides.
If you think your own repertoire of clothing needs a little bit of an update, if you think grandma or grandpa's, if you think your nephew or niece, and you're thinking, so I don't want to, you know, get the stuff everybody's got, we'll go to homefieldapparel.com. Look at the stuff for Minnesota. Very unique. Not going to find anywhere else. And I, if anything, Luke, you and I can go to our grave saying the quality of this stuff is so good, our wives constantly steal it. So when you get to checkout, use promo code Black Friday for 20% off your order.
All right, Ryan. I think we should have, before we get into the Big Ten games, we should take a minute to just talk about To talk about kind of the bigger picture, right? The regular season has wrapped up. The Gophers should get a bowl game. Maybe we should talk a little bit about that too. I've seen some online chatter about how the Gophers shouldn't accept a bowl game. And frankly speaking, like, I'm just going to get my two cents in here. This is the way, and this is the market that they play in. There are a lot of bowl games because bowl games draw big numbers. And if you think that the Gophers shouldn't take a bowl game, I personally think you're crazy. It's more about, like, this program, number one, has been really good on the field, in years past, and then off the field as well. And they're better than their peers, and they deserve the opportunity to be able to take this on. And it's also silly not to take it because you've got some young guys that could use more reps. Take the reps. Like, I don't for the life of me understand, other than the, like, old guy waving their hand at clouds, screaming into the ether that, well, this hasn't been, you know, this hasn't been the expectation forever. Like, why would you not take a thing like this? Maybe an opportunity like this. Maybe, Derek, you can quickly just talk about, like, as a player, bowls mean a lot, and it's like you've earned the opportunity to play again.
Yeah, it's funny. I think there's some sentiment within the players, the program, the, I guess, probably the diehard fans, the families, whatever, and they're all on board. I mean, these guys work year round to be able to play a very small number of games. So the opportunity to play an additional game, get additional practices, and travel for, you know, they've earned through the APR, and they've earned the right to travel and get somewhat of a reward in this scenario. I mean, everybody's all in. It's, I think when you get out in the fan base to the more casual fans, I was born and raised in Minnesota, so I can make this comment. I think Minnesotans think it's somewhat of an embarrassment. Like, we're going to be looked at as embarrassment. Well, I have news for you. Nobody outside of Minnesota cares. They don't care whether we're playing in a bowl game or not. Most of them haven't even seen Minnesota play. Like, it doesn't, our image isn't important here. So, well, it's, it, yeah, go, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, imagine for an instance that you're a salesperson, right? And that you didn't hit your quota. So you didn't get your bonus for the year, but the company got their quota and they actually crushed it out of the park, but your region just didn't develop, right? But are you going to say no to your company bonus for the whole team doing well? Like, who's going to say no to that? Like, and why should you? I don't understand why there's a sentiment of, like, you're doing a good job in the classroom. You're going to be one to be a student. So why are you going to try and nix these guys because they were 5-7? There's a structure in place and they happen to be the top of it. Like, lose me on that, I guess.
The only thing I would add is it took me, I don't know how many hundreds of episodes we've done, but I finally got Luke Buehr to say a Ryan Burns-ism when he says scream into the ether.
Yeah.
I am so proud of you right now. I cannot express that. This is such a proud father moment for me right now. And it only took to the end of the, I don't know,
320 recordings. Yeah.
It only took that long. The only thing I would also add to the bowl discussion is I hate the whole conversation of, well, they don't deserve it. I truly think people don't understand what the point of bowl games really is. The college football playoff and New Year's Day are their own separate entity. It's something that I've talked with a lot of media members about, and I don't know if they want me to name them or not, but bowl games are there to fill time. Yes. From December 16th until New Year's, whenever it is. And if you think there's too many bowl games, then stop watching them.
Yeah.
What do I mean by that? My favorite stat that Mike Grimm gives credit to Justin Gard for, that is true, is the Belk Bowl, B-E-L-K. If you've never heard of it, that's fine. But the stat is the Belk Bowl outdrew North Carolina Duke basketball. I think it was last year. Millions of people during the holidays have a lot of free time, and they love football, and they love watching football. And so I'm going to get hundreds of tweets and emails from people saying, whenever it is announced that Minnesota is going to Detroit or wherever it may be, well, they shouldn't accept it. I'm not going to watch. Yeah, you are. because that's that game is going to draw 1. Something million people to watch it on the day after Christmas or the week before Christmas, whatever it may be. The bowl get they have programming to fill, and people are going to watch. That's the whole point of bowl games like the one Minnesota is going to play in, whether it's in Albuquerque, Shreveport, or Shreveport, Memphis, Detroit. We'll see.
Who cares?
Yeah, we'll have bowl projections up because Dan Owen is the world's foremost Gopher football bowl expert. No one spends more time thinking about it. No one knows more about the intricacies of who can go where for each specific bowl game. Now, it's a little bit more complicated this year's, but we'll have that article out. Like, I hate the whole they don't deserve it. Regardless if you think that's true or not, if you want these bowl games like the one Minnesota's going to play in to not exist, stop watching because you say you will, and then you turn it on because nothing else is on television around the holidays.
Yeah, you're self-perpetuating the problem that you're mad about, so... Okay, let's talk some bigger picture stuff. Sorry, I got on a little rant, but I got annoyed with the sentiment online, particularly from the terrestrial radio, you know, talking heads that just have to be controversial. So.
Shock jocks, baby.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing I would say before we get into Big Ten is what's next? Everybody wants to know, well, what now? Season's over. Okay, yeah, regular season's over, and now it becomes transfer portal season. The transfer portal opens up for everybody on December the 4th. National Signing Day is on December the 20th. I would tell you, if you want to know what goes on, who's Minnesota going to look at in the portal, who might hit the portal, how is it going to play out with Coy Parrish and J.J. Abasiri, is there any other high school kids that Minnesota's going to bring in, yada, yada, yada. The next month is my busiest time of the year because I am trying to figure out the answers to all those questions, just like Minnesota is. It's 75% off at Gopher Illustrated for this Black Friday, Cyber Monday thing. And if you think $20, $30 for an entire year is too much of a price tag for you, okay. It's $1 for your first 30 days. That gets you through Christmas. So I don't want to hear anything. If you don't have a dollar, we need to have different discussions about your financial habits if you want to know what's going on. But that would be the thing is now is arguably the most crucial 30 days, or at least up until National Signing Day and into the January semester, is how does Minnesota retain their talent? How does Minnesota get more talent on their team? I mean, it's going to be a very crucial next 30 days for PJ Fleck, Luke.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. You obviously do a great job. We'll give you a shameless plug there. I'm not a big recruiting person, but you do these nightly recaps, which I do read. And that's how I become familiar with names. And then I proceed to forget them over the next year. But yeah, it's going to be fun. Currently the Gophers have a pretty good class, and can they hang on to it? And stability, frankly,
their best class. I don't know what it'll are. And wise, I think they're like 29th in the country right now. I mean, they've got a lot of good talent in there, and it's just going to be because you went 5-7, it's going to be retaining that talent, and we'll see how it all plays out. But
For sure. Retaining the talent is definitely something. And then the other thing is the coaching carousel, right? There might be some chaos there, and that's what can help you if you have stability.
Arguably one of, I think, the funnest parts of my job is trying to figure out. I mean, again, we'll get into it here when we start talking about these Big Ten games in a second, but like Indiana just opened. So you win, I win, but you win the bet because successfully prognosticate that Tom Allen isn't going to be there anymore. But $20 million to leave Texas A&M. What was your favorite? Mark Stoops was the Texas A&M coach for 45 minutes. Michigan State's got a brand new coach, which we'll get to. So is that where you want to start? Is with that Penn State Michigan State game?
Let's start with the Penn State Michigan State game. Yeah, so 42-0, Michigan State wins, Penn State wins. Michigan State already has their new head coach after this as well. But let's talk a little bit about the game. I mean, Michigan State kept it close, only 13-0 at half, but ultimately kind of got the doors blown off them in the second half, giving up 29 points to lose 42-0. Drew Aller on the day, 17 of 26 for 292 yards and 2 touchdowns. Penn State, great season for them. I know they're frustrated.
10 wins, and their average win total on that, or how much they won by, was over 20 points for the second consecutive year. But the only thing people in that town want to talk about is what, Luke?
The two losses that they have, Derek. I mean, an embarrassment of riches in some ways, right? Like, I understand you got to win those big games, but man, they've got it good.
It's interesting to see Ohio State and Penn State fans and their reaction to the season now that, you know, now that the regular season has concluded, and the disappointment. And really, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, Luke, but I'm really interested to see with the addition of the teams coming into the Big Ten where this goes. Because if your fan base is losing their mind after winning 10 or 11 games, what's going to happen after Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA come in, and now your 10 or 11 win seasons are going to turn into maybe 8 or 9 win seasons? What's that fan base going to do? So, yeah, bringing it back to Penn State, I think you summed it up well. This was close for, you know, actually a lot of the first half. Penn State was able to pull away, but their fan base is fed up with winning the games they should win and not winning the, not reaching up and grabbing more wins above their head. So where do they go with it is the question.
I think it's going to be a theme on this podcast today, especially with a certain 11 a.m. game played out. But I it's so interesting to get a perspective like that where you have won so many games by so many points, but just because you can't win two games, people, and I get it, you want to aspire for more, but if there's just a point where you get double digit wins every year in college football and you don't think that's good enough, I don't know. I mean, on the Michigan State side of things, they hired Jonathan Smith from Oregon State, someone that actually crossed paths with Mark Coyle when Mark Coyle was back at Boise State. He was an offensive I think he was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. So your guy coming out from the Pac-12 to the new Big Ten, Luke.
Yeah, from the Pac-2, really. He's good. He took a Oregon State program that's been up and down and has really solidified them. And they had a great season. But ultimately, you can't turn down the opportunity to go to a place like Michigan State in the Big Ten. I think this is, you know, the destination jobs are going to be in the Big Ten and the SEC going forward, fellas. I think that's just a reality. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the other Friday, Black Friday game. Iowa finds a way to go 10-2, 7-2, winning 13-10 over Nebraska, who will miss a bowl game for, I believe, the 7th season in a row. They end 5-7, 3-6. They had a number of close games, including against the Gophers and including against the Iowa Hawkeyes. You'll notice that the score was very similar as well. But you guys, like, this is, it's just wild, this ending, right? Iowa throws an interception with what, like 31 seconds left on the clock. Two plays later, with 15 seconds left, Chubba Purdy throws an interception, and then you have a three-play field goal, and Iowa takes the win. You have to give them credit.
Over-under in college football history at 25.5 looked like it was under. Serious doubt through the first half. And then, I mean, that was the Big Ten West game of Big Ten West games. You had Nebraska blocked two Iowa field goals. You had, I think Nebraska missed a 44-yarder. And then at the end, to your point, Iowa throws a late interception, and then Chubba Purdy. I feel for him, but I will also say the statement, Chubba Purdy is the reason why Nebraska is 5-7 and not 7-5. Because I think back to that Maryland game where it's tied, it's third and goal. He throws an egregious interception that leads to Maryland points and they lose. And then in this game, that interception that he threw, I don't know who he was throwing it to other than the referee, but in front of the referee was an Iowa Hawkeye defender, and he just threw it right to him. An absolutely egregious interception. Iowa gets, I think they break off like a 20-yard run from LaShawn Williams, kick a field goal as time's expiring. Every Iowa game is the same. And it's just, I am very curious to see for that football team, without Brian Ferentz, with going into a new Big Ten, how do they adjust like all these Big Ten teams do as this thing continues to go forward?
You guys have talked about this on Pair and Spare. And Justin Gard has astutely pointed out that the offensive issues begin and end probably with Kirk Ferentz and not Brian Ferentz. And Brian just gets a lot of the heat. And I think that's similar here to Minnesota. But ultimately in this game, you have to give Iowa credit, Derek. You know, they played to a certain script the last 5 years and they found a way. It may not be aesthetically pleasing. And I don't quite get the people that are like, hey, this isn't aesthetically pleasing football. Like, give them credit. Like, they win football games. Who cares how you win them? Just win them.
Yeah, they of all teams have stuck to a system and a formula, and they haven't changed. I mean, we look at Wisconsin and how they basically threw out the old style. They said, we're gonna iterate. We're going to get with the times and move into this new era of passing and explosive plays. And Iowa has done the opposite, where they said, no, we're sticking with, and it's worked. And maybe it's worked because they're in the Big Ten West and there aren't enough explosive offenses to challenge them. I don't want to take too much away from them, but the results are the results. It's worked. And I just wanted to say too about Nebraska. I don't know that there's another team that is closer to turning it around, like needs less to turn it around. Cause I agree with Ryan 100%. You look at Nebraska this year, although the record is just astoundingly, the record wasn't better. They were better on special teams. They were better on defense. They were way better coached. And yet they still, because of the play at quarterback primarily, they weren't able to get more wins. So if you're a Nebraska fan, and I say this begrudgingly as a Minnesota fan, I think you look at it and you say, boy, if we can get two or three things fixed, this turns from a 5-win team to, who knows, 8-win-plus team, because they were that good, I think, on defense, and they were better on special teams and better coached.
Yeah, question will be, can they keep their defensive coordinator, Ryan?
Yeah, I think he's up for the San Diego State job.
Yeah.
I think Tony White. So we'll see. I mean, again, I think Nebraska, like a lot of these teams in the Big Ten, is a couple players away, just like Minnesota is.
All right, maybe we'll work back towards the Michigan and Ohio State game. So we'll start with the Maryland-Rutgers game. Maryland wins 42-24. You know, Rutgers just had an abysmal end to their season after becoming bowl eligible. I mean, kudos to them. They end up 6-6, 3-6 in conference. Maryland finally bounced back in November after having a terrible run as well. Ended up 7-5, 4-5. You know, Rutgers got down early, 21-3 in the first quarter, and ultimately just could never claw their way back in. But I mean, you could argue, I don't know that they ever had the offense to claw back in after getting down so early, Derek.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see this one. So, Maryland, you know, the comment I keep repeating is when things click on offense for them, they can play with anybody, but when they don't, they could lose to anybody. I mean, it ebbs and flows with the way their ability to pass the ball is on offense.
Final game, regular season game of Taulia Tagovailoa, 361, 3 touchdowns, only 1 turnover, which I think is the important part for a guy like him. I mean, if you're able to put up 42 points against Kirk Soraka, you're probably going to win the game. I mean, peace and love, but like, bad day for Joe Harris-Semiak's defense. But like we talked about after that miraculous October they had, it was going to be a gauntlet in November, and it was a gauntlet in November.
All right. We should also get to, you've already alluded to it, I think, Ryan, Tom Allen is fired after they lose 31-35 to Purdue. Indiana
$20 million buyout, Luke. $20 million buyout.
How? It is a good gig if you can get it. So Indiana moves to 3-9, 1-8 in conference. Purdue moves to 4-8, 3-6 in conference. You just scratch your head, like, how did the Gophers lose, just get blown out by Purdue, who really struggled with Indiana? You got to give Indiana credit to a certain extent. They never quit, I don't think, on the whole season on Tom Allen. You got to give him credit for that. But they were just never able to translate that into wins. They could keep games close, but couldn't do it. Hudson Card comes back for Purdue, you know, with some rib soreness, but ultimately was able to will them to victory 24-21 for 275 yards and three touchdowns on the day. And Purdue, you know, gets that third conference victory. They're not going to get a bowl, but it'd be interesting to see what Ryan Walters and his crew can do going into next season.
I mean, the story of the game, why did Purdue win and why did Indiana lose in a 35-31 shootout? Which team had three turnovers? Which one had?
Exactly.
That's it.
So I'm going to be very curious to see what happens here at Indiana, because when you pay a $20 million buyout at a school like Indiana, I have a hard time believing that you're going to go big then with your next hire, which screams to me someone like Jason Candle at Toledo, Chris Creighton at Eastern Michigan potentially. You know, I'm not expecting some big name there, because that's a tough job, just like it is in Minnesota. So I still can't believe that they decided $20 million. Some booster wanted to find out what life was like on the other side of Tom Allen. But welcome to the coaching carousel.
All right. Let's talk quickly, too, about Northwestern moving to 5-7, 5-4 in conference, fellas. Winning 45-43 over Illinois, who will be 5-7, 3-6. Sorry, I think I said Northwestern was 5-7. They're 7-5, 5-4 in conference. And ultimately, this was a barn burner, and it looked like John Paddock had once again some miracle in him. They got a 80-yard Casey Washington touchdown, but the 2-point conversion failed, so they weren't able to tie the game up under a minute. But heck of a run for Illinois to try and come back there. But you got to give Northwestern all the credit in the world to accomplish what they did.
So they won 4 of their last 5. I mean, they beat Maryland, Purdue, Wisconsin, and now Illinois. Like, David Braun deserves, I think he should be Big Ten Coach of the Year, contrary to what Ann Arbor, Michigan thinks, for what he was able to do with this team and what that team was able to do, especially in this game. I mean, just a wacky, wacky game where 10 points in the first quarter, 37 in the fourth, 37 points in a Big Ten West game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, just an incredible job by David Braun. And then Illinois had opportunities the last couple of weeks against Iowa and now Northwestern to get bowl eligible. They're not able to get there. Same thing. I think they would go back and look at their Wisconsin game too, of why they weren't able to get bowl eligibility. And unfortunately for them, they're not going to be bowling.
Derek, did you get a chance to watch this one?
Yeah. The thing that amazed me about this game, and I guess these two teams in general, we talk about Iowa and Minnesota always wanting to push towards a game script, you know, wanting to push toward one certain path. These two teams are the opposite. Northwestern and Illinois, they can win or lose games 10-7, or they can win or lose games 45-43. It's really amazing to see that both of these coaches and staffs don't have any issue playing to the game flow. And so, as you guys mentioned it, it was just both teams playing tight, both teams keeping it close to the vest. It looked like it was going to be low scoring. But the minute that it broke open, both teams and coaches made the decision that, okay, we just got to outscore the other team. And it became the ball going up and down the field. Like, it would. So if you didn't care about records or rankings, this was a really entertaining game to watch, particularly in the second half. It got wild. And I always will watch Brett Bielema coach teams just because of the way they're able to go with the game flow. You just can't keep them out. Doesn't matter if they're playing up, playing down, whatever. And so it was entertaining.
All right. And then finally, Michigan moves to 12-0, 9-0 in conference, winning 30-24 over Ohio State, who moves to 11-1, 8-1 in conference. I think the game probably lived up to the billing for most people. I thought it was a fantastically compelling game. Ultimately, probably the difference is the two turnovers by Ohio State. They had an opportunity, obviously, late, and then ultimately McCord ends up throwing that other interception. And then it's probably the turnover that wasn't, right, fellas? The touchdown that ends up going in, where the ball is stripped away from the receiver, maybe could have been an interception. That'll obviously cloud some controversy for Ohio State fans. But ultimately, Michigan – and their ability to run the ball probably was the difference in this game. Derek, we'll give you the start.
Yeah, two things that stood out to me in this game. For all the fanfare around both defenses and some of the skill position players, I thought the offensive line and at points for both teams, the ability to run the ball on long sustaining drives was really a factor in the game that got Ohio State back in the game. Their ability to just run the ball, I think at one time it was 8 or 10 straight runs right down the field in a scoring drive. But then in late in the game, Michigan's ability to run the ball, burn the clock, hang on to the ball, keep the chains moving, I think that was one thing that stood out. The second was quarterback play. At the risk of sounding like a Rube take, I think that both teams have talent. Both teams are deep. They're both top five teams. They look like it. They look like potential college football playoff teams. But 70% of the time, the Ohio State QB is good enough. 30% of the time, he's not good enough. And that just in a top five game isn't going to cut it. And I think that also played into the difference.
I'm going to miss watching Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, everybody knows that he is the best receiver in the Big Ten, arguably should be a Heisman Trophy winner to me. And all he did all season long, when you are the number one person that opposing defensive coordinators in the Big Ten are trying to take away, and he has scored touchdowns now in every game since the Notre Dame game. Like, he's got 14 touchdowns on the year, goes 5 for 118 in this game against Michigan. And he is the real deal to me. I mean, I know his dad was really, really good, and we'll see what his NFL career looks like. But I'm going to run him is what I take away from a game like this that hasn't already been touched on.
Have you seen, just one more comment on him, Ryan, have you ever seen another player who does what he does and never looks like he's running more than half speed? I mean, that's just how athletic and how easy that guy moves.
Those are the elite, elite, elite athletes where it just looks like they're gliding and they're not exerting a lot of energy and they're always consistently creating separation. And he's one of those guys, certainly.
Yeah. And then again, now you move to probably have to talk quickly about Ryan Day and, you know, Ohio State's frustration now that he's lost three games to Michigan, yet he's won all of his other Big Ten games. And, you know, now there's the rumor he might go to Texas A&M, and Ohio State fans might even be pleased about that, which to me is just absolutely ludicrous. But, you know, to each their own. Must be nice to sit from that perspective and think that, hey, well, we've lost three games to one opponent. Can't go forward anymore.
It's something, man. Like, he's 40-0 against the rest of the Big Ten and not against Michigan.
Yeah.
Like, and now people want to have him fired. I think his record is like 1-6 against top five opponents. Do people understand it's really difficult to beat top five opponents because top five opponents are like really, really good? Yeah. Like, I understand Ohio State's supposed to be there. But I can't imagine firing a guy like that. But again, I'm not a part of a media network like that where I'm entrenched in it. And I know it's frustrating to lose to your rival three straight years. I witnessed it with Minnesota versus Iowa for a long time, or Minnesota versus Wisconsin for a long time. But goodness gracious.
I would say be careful what you wish for, right? Because you look, how many times did Harbaugh lose to Michigan in a row? And they stuck with it, and look where they are now. Now, I mean, people will say, well, what about the cheating and all this stuff? And it's like, okay, sure. You bring up a reasonable point there. But in the same respect, like, it's sometimes it's better to have, consistency and, familiarity. And I wouldn't be so quick to get rid of Ryan Day personally. I don't know about you, Derek.
Yeah, the only thing I have to add is that I know it's real. I have some connections to Ohio State fans through work, and they're not happy. They're not, and they are. It's not a bit. I mean, it's not them saying, well, if we don't beat Michigan, the coach's job is on the line. That's not a thing. I mean, that's not fake. That's real. And whether we like it or not. So it's wild to me. College football is, and rivalries are alive and well. If you got a chance to see the Auburn Alabama finish, a lot of these games, and that's what I love about college football. One of the core things is these rivalries, but it's So it's crazy that a team in the top five, undefeated, loses to another team in the top five, undefeated, and the fans are ready to run the coach out of town. It's crazy. It's just crazy to me. Now, whether they're right or wrong, I guess time will tell. But I think, to your point, Luke, the higher up you go in the sport, I think the more fluctuation you see. You don't generally see this at FCS or Division II or Division III level. It's generally those coaches, they stay through thick and thin, as long as they're running a decent program. There's dips, there's highs, there's lows. But when you get up at this level of Power 5 college football, it's just, there's no margin for error. It'll be really, really, really interesting to see how this shakes out.
All right. Well, guys, it's been a really fun season to break down, even though it's been pretty frustrating. Obviously, it's been fun talking to you, I should say. Hopefully, many of you have found this therapeutic. I would say thank you for supporting our sponsors, but maybe more importantly, support the work that Ryan does on Gopher Illustrated. He does a great job. You might know that I don't read all of it. I don't have an immense amount of time to be able to read all of it, but the stuff I do read, Ryan, you do a wonderful job. Again, we want to thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.